Lovers. Tristan and Isolde, Romeo and Juliet, Heathcliff and Catherine, Sue Ellen and J.R., Kanye and Kim, the doomed lovers we know, all owe a great debt to the tragic Greek tradition that preceded them. Pyramus and Thisbe. When we hear the name Babylon, we think of a Middle Eastern civilization famed for ribaldry and excess. Its hanging gardens were one of the original seven wonders of the world, and for a time, Babylon was the largest city in the world. The remains of the city lie under the sand of Iraq, about 50 miles south of Baghdad. The Babylonian Empire took in much of Asia Minor. Indeed, some believe that this story really took place in Cilicia, the kingdom that Cilix founded before he joined Cadmus and the other sons of Agenor in their quest for Europa. Ovid, however, is happy to locate the action plumb in the centre of Babylon, and that is where I have placed it, too. In Babylon, then, lived two families who had been feuding, no one quite remembers why, for generations. Their great palaces stood next to each other on the main street of the city, but the children of each household were raised as enemies, forbidden so much as to speak, write, or sign to one another. One of the families had a son called Pyramus, and the other a daughter called Thisbe, who somehow fell in love with each other despite the obstacles in their way. They had discovered a small hole in a shared wall between their adjoining homes. Through this aperture they whispered, swapping views of life, poetry and music, until they found themselves falling very deeply in love. The hole in the wall was too small to allow them to touch, but the heat of their young and ardent passion could be breathed from one mouth to another through that benevolent chink, intensified by the forbidden nature of their feelings and their thrillingly unbridgeable proximity. This exchange of hot, youthful breath inflamed them so much that one night, maddened beyond endurance, they arranged each to escape their respective palaces and meet at night in the grounds of the tomb of Pyramus's ancestor, the Assyrian king Ninus, founder of the great city of Nineveh. And so, the following evening, the nimble and quick-witted Thisbe slips the guardians of her room and the sentries on duty outside her father's palace, and is soon beyond the city walls, built all those years ago by her ancestor, Queen Semiramis. When she reaches the trysting place, Thisbe encounters not her lover, Pyramus, but a savage lion, whose jaws drip with the blood of its recent prey, an ox. Frightened by its roars, Thisbe runs from the cemetery. In the hurry and panic of her flight, she drops her veil. The lion approaches the veil, snuffles it, takes it between its jaws, and shakes it from side to side, staining it with some of the ox blood on its muzzle, before letting it fall back to the ground, giving one last roar and padding off into the night. A little later, Pyramus arrives on the scene and sets himself to wait for his beloved under a tall mulberry tree loaded with its heavy summer burden of snow-white fruit. A shaft of moonlight shoots between the tree's branches and illuminates Thisbe's veil, which is lying on the ground, all smeared and dabbled with gore. Pyramus snatches it up. Horror-struck, he can make out the embroidered crest of Thisbe's family in the blood-stained linen, and more than that, he recognizes the scent of the girl with whom he has exchanged the fierce fever of love's breath so many times. Paw prints on the ground bear witness to the presence of a lion. Blood, paw prints, the family crest, the unmistakable scent of Thisbe herself, the clear and tragic meaning of it all bursts in on Pyramus. With a cry of despair, he draws his sword and stabs himself deep in the stomach, ripping the wound wider from side to side in his hurry to join his dead beloved. Blood spurts up from him like a fountain, dyeing the white mulberries purple. "You took the beloved Thisbe away before we could be united for the short span of our lives," Pyramus cries to the heavens. "So let us be one in the endless night of eternal death." With these noble words, he expires upon the ground. In the farcical production in A Midsummer Night's Dream, Pyramus, played by Bottom, cries out, as he stabs himself, "Thus die I, thus, thus, thus! Now I am dead, now I am fled, my soul is in the sky, tongue, lose thy light, moon, take thy flight, now die, 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 die." Enter Thisbe. In the dead hands of Pyramus, she sees her own veil, smeared and spattered with blood. She sees the lion paw prints and reads all too clearly the story written there. "Oh, gods, can you have been so jealous of our love that you could not grant us even one short moment of happiness?" she cries. She sees Pyramus's sword pointing up to the stars. It is still hot and wet with his blood. She throws herself upon it, plunging it deep into her belly with a cry of triumph and ecstasy in one of the most Freudian suicides ever. When the two families are taken to the site of the tragedy, they fall weeping on each other's necks and beg forgiveness. The feud is over. The lovers' bodies are cremated and their ashes mixed together in a single urn. As for their spirits, well, Pyramus was turned into the river that bore his name for millennia, and Thisbe into a spring whose waters run into it. The flow of the Pyramus, now called the Seihan, has been dammed for hydroelectric energy, so the power of the two lovers now goes to light Turkish homes. In honour of their love and sacrifice, the gods decreed that the mulberry fruit will from that moment on be always a deep crimson purple, the colour of passion and blood.